From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of September 2021. It's USDA Report Day. The grain stocks numbers were out earlier today. We'll talk about those and the impact they had in Chicago with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And then a bit later in the program, we'll look forward and backwards, I suppose, into the world of weeds and corn and soybeans across the Midwest in the state of Illinois and how climate change is impacting weeds. We'll do that with Aaron Hager from University of Illinois Extension. He's a weed scientist. And as we close out our time together, we will talk about the weather indeed. That with Mike Tenera from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today at $5.36¾, down 2¼ cents. The March at $5.44½, 2½ lower, and the May contract down 2¾ at $5.49, holding pretty steady after a rough USDA grain stocks number. We'll talk about that in a second with Matt Bennett. Soybeans, on the other hand, down 27¾ cents in the lead November at $12.56. The January at $12.65½, 28th lower in the March at $12.72, down 26½ cents. The bean meal at $3.26.20, up 11, rather down $11.90. And bean oil $1.01 higher at $58.79 on its settlement price. December wheat 15¼ higher at $7.25½ for the soft red. The hard red at $7.31, up 21 cents for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $125.72½, down $1.32½ on the afternoon. Feeders at $152.90, $2.37½ lower, and lean hogs $85.40, up $1.80 for the day. Crude oil at $75.21, 38 cents lower a barrel. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us on this USDA grain stocks report day. Thank you, Matt, for being with us for the day. Let's review some of those numbers to begin with. With the corn and soybeans, they now say the carryout for the old crop, because this is the last one for the quarter on corn, is 1.24 billion bushels. That compares to what USDA was using at 1.187. And for soybeans, it's 256 million. That's up from the 175. Now, you can use the grain stocks, this grain stocks, and just kind of roll it into the next October WASDE report. So there are two different reports we're talking about, but they work in conjunction. What did you think of those numbers when you saw them today?
Definitely a very large miss as far as soybeans were concerned, you know, on a percentage basis. I mean, it was significant, almost 50% miss. And so corn, I was maybe even more surprised. You know, the reason I was surprised on corn, and let's face it, it's hard to get a handle on just how much corn is throughout the entire corn belt. But, you know, it was, we were running on fumes. I mean, every originator that we talked to, every originator that our sister company, John Stewart & Associates, you know, that's what they work with, is end users, you know, ethanol plants, you name it. I'll tell you, everyone we talked to was running either empty or on fumes. And so really surprised that they raised that a little bit. It'll be interesting to see. In my opinion, they're going to have to lower feed and residual demand, most likely, for old crop there, is my only guess. But to me, the biggest surprise was probably the percentage that we all missed it on soybeans. Now, it makes some sense, because if you watch this summer, you know, the basis indicated that buyers were still able to buy a few beans if they needed to. It seemed to me like some of the crushers just decided to go offline, you know, because they expected this tightness. But by all means, the trade was very surprised to see, you know, 256 or whatever the number was. I mean, it was significantly higher than what any of us really thought it was going to be.
Yeah, you talked about the adjustments that came in the corn. And while that number is bigger, so the carryout, or the carry-in at 1.24 billion bushels is bigger than it had been, given that USDA adjusted down total production for last year by 71 million. So there's a lot of adjustments that probably are going to have to show up in the WASDE in October, I guess, to make all of these numbers work and the supply and demand figures.
Yeah, I'm assuming the same thing. I mean, I know that there's always a lot of different ways to try to decipher exactly what they're trying to do. And I don't know exactly what the situation is. To me, it's been interesting. The last 2 years, everyone's come in thinking that the corn stocks report at the end of the year wasn't going to be that big a deal. And then we got this huge bullish surprise. This year, the trade was certainly lean and bullish the way that we were trading this week, and we got a bearish surprise. So the last three stocks reports we've got this marketing year, this one that we just exited, you know, we saw really a pretty friendly stocks report each time. Disappearance was pretty good, you know, and then we just didn't have as much corn on hand as what most people thought. You come in here at the end of the year and you reverse course. So I don't know. It's kind of a head scratcher, to be quite honest with you. But at the same time, this corn market performed admirably in the case, you know, that we only settled down a penny and a half, 2 cents, you know, whenever you got what I would call a pretty bearish report.
Yeah. Soybeans, on the other hand, really were surprised.
Yeah. Soybeans didn't perform admirably, but you would expect, you know, you would expect that you're going to give up some gains. Now, I wouldn't say that I've been bearish lately, but boy, it's been a while since I've been bullish, this bean situation. There's several things that are going on, especially now that you throw these stocks at it. I do think this bean crop's getting bigger, first of all. Second of all, I mean, I'll tell you what, I think bean acres in 22, you know, are something that you have to assume are going to be pretty stout. Especially whenever you look at these fertilizer prices. So a lot of folks are not only harvesting a really nice bean crop this year, but they're also staring double the cost for fertilizer to put a corn crop out. So I think those two things in tandem could end up being a little bit supportive for corn long term and probably a little bit of a headwind for soybeans long term.
What do you think the crop production report next week or in October is going to show from USDA? It's not next week, it's the week after.
Yeah, my gut feeling is that you're going to see a bean crop this bigger. I think that you'll go up at least a bushel, maybe more. I hear very few people that are disappointed in bean yields, whereas with corn yields, we're definitely hearing a mixed bag. Awfully good yields in places, and then some places, performance is way under expectations. So, you know, my personal opinion is that this report is going to be kind of a mixed bag. And I think some of it is going to be, essentially, a function of what we saw today. So it'll be very interesting to see how we trade this report. I think it's probably done and over with for the time being. Now we're just waiting on October. But I don't think that you should expect to see a bullish report, you know, as far as soybeans are concerned.
Okay, so that WASDE report is due out the 12th. The grain that you run across the scale between now and then, corn and soybeans, are you going to store it or are you going to try to sell it before we get to the WASDE report?
You know, my thought all along has been to sell all the beans that you don't have contracted, you know, and then if you wanted to enter into something that you could essentially participate in the upside, you know, do so. So if, let's say that you're selling beans for 12 and a quarter across the scale, you know, buy a 25, 30 cent call option or call spread, you know, and then if the market doesn't do anything, then you still got $12 beans. On corn, I think I've got a little more hope. Certainly today, throwing more stocks at it maybe throws a little bit of cold water on that. But again, in the grand scheme of things, I think there's support there. And so if I throw the corn in the bin, I'm going to look for basis long term to get better. And I think that I'm going to try to store that corn like the elevator does, you know, and merchandise it in that way. But for soybeans, I'm a little more of a seller, maybe more so than corn.
You and I, through the month of August, and maybe not into the beginning of September, but through the month of August, thought that the Illinois corn crop was a record breaker. One, do you still think that is the case? And if not, do you also think that the Western Corn Belt, Iowa in particular, will make up the downtrend?
Great question. I don't think Illinois is a record breaker anymore. In fact, I think Illinois is going to come in well below that 214 that the USDA suggested and below the 210 that we previously posted. But Iowa is certainly going to be better than the USDA has already suggested it was going to be. So it's going to make up for some of that. Now, I'm not sure I expect national yield to go up much, but if it does on corn, you know, I think it's going to be marginal. I think where your big adjustment, not only on a bushel basis, but on a percentage basis, is going to be soybeans.
How much?
I think a good bushel, maybe more.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. Later today, you'll find there our Commodity Week program. I'll record that about 3 o'clock with our guests this week, including Dale Durkholz, Jim McCormick, and John Zanker. Dale, of course, with Grain Cycles, Jim with AgMarket.net, and John is with Risk Management Commodities Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at the marketplace, a panel discussion about the markets and the outside influences that are taking place on corn, soybeans, and other commodities across the planet. You can find it online most Thursdays, with the exception of when there's a Friday USDA report, at willag.org after about 6 o'clock. That's willag.org. Earlier today, I hosted another in the Farm Doc Daily webinar series for the fall. You can find that series and sign up for it still if you'd like. It's free online in our website at willag.org. Look in the calendar or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Today, we talked about the variability of the weather going forward, as the climate has been changing over the last 50 years, and what that means for weed suppression. Aaron Hager was there along with Marty Williams. I did ask Aaron before we started the program to talk a little bit about the weed problems that producers saw in their fields this year and what he thinks is of enough concern to consider this fall from the combine cab.
We had several significant issues come up this year, Todd, without a doubt. And you know, right now we always remind folks, you know, this is really the opportunity for the last wheat survey of the year from the combine cab. And so certainly encourage folks to, you know, make note of what they see, how to address it perhaps better going into the next growing season. And, you know, meet with somebody, give us a call, and we'll be happy to have a conversation, see if we can perhaps come up with some better recommendations for the next growing season.
What kind of particular problems do you think they'll see?
I think we're going to have some issues next year, especially on the supply chain side. We've had conversation with several distributors and primary manufacturers, and there's probably going to be quite a bit of tight inventory next year. So we'll have to give some thought about, you know, application rates, timings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, trying to make sure that we can get through most of the growing season to adequately maintain the weed management in order to try to maximize crop yield in 2022.
Do you mean to say that scouting fields next season will be imperative so that you can time applications properly and use only what you need to?
Yeah, next year could be very, very critical, as you mentioned, for the appropriate timing, because if we're late, we may not have that rescue treatment available next year.
Are there any new active ingredients in the pipeline over the next several years that give you some hope that there might be a better experience for weed control in the near future?
There'll be new premixes that come into the marketplace even in 2022. But in terms of new active ingredients, it's more likely we're looking at probably 3 years out before we really see something that we haven't seen much of here, at least not in North America. So not in the immediate future, but we do have hope maybe in about another 3 or 4 years we could have something.
Hey, at least that's a change from the past, I suppose.
That's a change from about the last 15 years, Todd, if we're counting. So
same subject matter, Aaron, but a different area, cultural practices, things like these seed smashers that we've seen that are available to mount to the back end of a combine that runs the chaff through a very tight area and smashes the seed, making it so that it can't emerge. I'm wondering how long it takes for weeds to adapt to cultural practices like this or some other practices. And I'm thinking, for instance, about the changing emergence of water hemp in the state of Illinois based on herbicide application timing.
That's a really good question, Todd. And the simple fact or the simple answer is that, yes, eventually they do adapt. The speed at which the adaptation takes place is really dependent on a whole host of factors. And it's kind of perilous, I guess, to try to put any numbers to it. But I've got an example of this. There was actually a paper published here back in the late 1960s or early 1970s, which made a prediction that Illinois farmers would never have to contend with giant ragweed as a weed problem in cornfields or soybean fields. Now, if you farm in the northern part of Illinois or certain river bottoms of Illinois, that probably caught your attention because you have giant ragweed populations with which you deal with annually. But the focus of that work was looking at the emergence pattern of giant ragweed. And essentially what they did is they made multiple collections around the state and did what's called a common garden experiment, where they planted these different accessions at one location. And they kept track of how long they emerged in the spring. And essentially they were done emerging by May 1st. Now, we said earlier that that work was done back in the late 1960s, but think about how we farmed in the late 1960s. You know, we weren't planting most of the corn and soybean crop by mid-April. We had plantings that were very common throughout the month of May. Well, and back in the late 60s and early 70s, we worked most of the ground before we planted it. So therefore, if you had a weed that had emerged, you worked the ground before you planted. That was the basis of that summary from that paper that was published so many years ago. Well, a few years back, that's experiment was repeated. So accessions or collections of giant ragweed were made across fields in Illinois, brought back for common garden experiment. The difference this time around, though, was that the researchers also included accessions of giant ragweed that had been collected from areas that had never been farmed. So for example, a woodlot somewhere, maybe the corner of a cemetery somewhere. These populations had never been exposed to agricultural production practices. This has nothing to do with herbicide resistance, okay? And so when they repeated this experiment, what they found is that the giant ragweed collections or accessions that came from agricultural fields, now they had emergence by May 1st, like it always had, but they saw prolonged emergence. They saw emergence that continued throughout the month of June, even into July. But the few accessions that were collected from areas that had never been farmed, they came up and stopped at May 1st. So in other words, giant ragweed as a species over a period of 40, 50 years has simply adapted to how we farm these days. And you mentioned water hemp, another example of a species that is very adaptable to how we farm. And certainly one way that we have seen this evolutionary adaptability is in its evolution of many of the herbicides that were once previously effective for it.
And one final question. This one has to do with the mitigation things that producers might be able to do today. For instance, Aaron, you often, when you and I talk in an interview, we'll discuss the importance of cleaning a combine out before moving from one field to another. What kinds of things can producers do today that might be helpful for the future?
You know, I think one thing, Todd, right off the bat is just simply the recognition of the fact that seeds are going to move, whether it be by practices that farmers are doing, moving weed seeds through tillage equipment, through combines. That certainly is a very visible, easy way to see seed movement. But seeds are going to move in other ways. They're going to move in migrating waterfowl, for example. They're going to move by movement of water. So recognizing the fact that, again, their populations last year may not always be the same populations that they're going to contend with this year. You know, for example, if you had a scenario where in 2021, you had a herbicide that was very effective on your problem weed species. Well, what happens over the wintertime after harvest when we're not paying attention because we're doing other things and somehow this new seed has been deposited in the field? Maybe there's a flock of geese that fed in that field for several days and they deposited seeds from, you know, 2,000 miles from here. Well, now you've got the start of a new problem. And, you know, scouting is certainly a good effort before application, after application. If you see changes taking place, don't just assume that there was something wrong with the application, for example. This may be that change, evolutionary change taking place, and try to adjust your program as fast as possible and stay in front of these changes, because it's always easier to try to manage a problem before it actually happens than try to fix the problem after it happens.
That was University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager. I spoke with him before and during today's webinar from the FarmDoc team, the FarmDoc Daily Fall Update webinar series. You can see that whole webinar in its archive form up on the FarmDoc Daily website. Just look for farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and then search for webinars and look for the archive. You'll look for Aaron Hager and Marty Williams talking about the variability of weather and the future of weeds in corn and soybean fields. It's a really good listen and watch, a great PowerPoint display, so you want to check that out as well. On this Thursday, let's check the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Thank you, Mike, for being with us today. Let's get started right away with harvest weather in the Midwest. I take it there's some rainfall coming through.
Yeah, we have two upper-level systems that are going to move through over the next 5 days. So that will turn a lot of the Corn Belt wetter as we move through the weekend. Now, we're not looking for a major rain event with totals in excess of 1 to 2 inches, but certainly a half of an inch on the low side to 1.5 inches on the high side. That's kind of what we're looking at for most corn and soybean producers. So that's certainly going to slow things down a little bit, but probably the good news for producers is that it's going to dry out next week, so we don't look for another rain right after this, and temperatures are going to stay pretty mild. We have Arctic air that's very, very far to the north, and we're not going to be tapping into that anytime soon. So this unusually mild period that we've been in is essentially going to continue despite some of the rain coming up.
And how do you see October playing out as a full month?
Well, it's always challenging to get too far out into the month just because it's still September. But once we get around 10 to 15 days into the future, there are hints of a cool-off. Now, this cool-off does look fairly substantial just from looking at some of our weather maps, but it's still 10 to 15 days out, and we should be expecting a major cool-off at some point. The weather that we're experiencing now is not normal. We've seen highs in the 70s, 80s, and 90s across the central U.S. over the last week or two, even including yesterday, and it should be around 10 to 20 degrees cooler at this time of the year. So once we do move back into a more normal type of weather pattern, it is going to feel a lot different because of the anomalous weather we're having at the moment.
What do you see for South America?
Well, it's going to be turning wetter in southern Brazil and Paraguay as we move forward. We'll see a couple of thunderstorm clusters develop over the next 2 days. And then we have a number of waves of energy that are going to pass. Each one of those will trigger a heavy thunderstorm cluster here and there. And so it's going to be a lot wetter start to the growing season than what we saw a year ago. And that's certainly good news for farmers there because they had some unusual weather with a drought in the beginning of the growing season last year and then a drought at the end. So we're starting this season with a much wetter period, which will help to get corn planting moving along. Now, we do need to see some higher totals once we get into the middle of October, especially in central and northern areas of Brazil where not much rain is on the immediate horizon. But they tend to turn a lot wetter over the next 4 to 8 weeks. So we're not concerned about that at the moment. It will start to rain there as they move into the rainy season. And that's when we'll start to see soybean planting move forward.
Hey, thank you.
Yep, great being here, Todd.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.